Straight Talk on WRHI is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill, Manning Kimmel.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. My name is Manning Kimmel. The program is called Straight Talk. We do it every weekday afternoon, talking about Rock Hill, Fort Mill, TKK, the great county of York, and everything else up and down I-77. And we do it right here on WRHI, South Carolina's seven-time radio station of the year. Our broadcast presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to HighSpeedWeb.net for streaming our signal 24/7, 365. Well, the man in charge of that big institution across the street, Dr. Dan Mahoney, is with us today. The president for three whole years.
Almost.
Almost. It looks like you survived it okay.
Yeah.
Everything on target? Everything working the way it's supposed to? No problems?
There's always problems, but
come on.
In general, things are going well.
You know, one of the things that you worked on diligently for at least your first year was trying to formulate a new strategic plan for Winthrop University, which you unveiled in grand fashion over at Burns Auditorium. And since then, you've had an update, an annual update, which I gather is something you're going to continue to do.
Yeah, we'll do that every year.
So how far along, how are we doing, what are the measurements, that kind of thing?
Yeah, there's about 25 different measurements, and in the first year we hit on
some. We only have a half an hour.
Yeah, we hit on some, we exceeded on some, and then some we were a little short on, which is kind of what we expected. We tried to set aggressive enough goals that we wouldn't actually hit every single one of them, but it allows us every year to reflect and make adjustments in what we're doing. So in some cases we even have increased our 2025 goals because we're making more progress than we expected. In other cases, we haven't lowered any of our 2025 goals. They just have stayed the same, but we've adjusted a few up.
You pull this this plan together using resources on the campus,
yeah,
students, faculty, everybody else associated with the school, but you also reached out to the community as well.
Yeah, we asked for input from the community on the front end, and then we had committees on campus, you're right, of faculty, staff, and students who kind of put everything together. So it was really a group development process.
So these 25 goals that you have, are they set up with different committees managing each one of them?
Yeah, we actually now have what we call, originally we had working groups to develop a lot of the ideas and strategies, and now we have action groups. And their role is really to monitor the progress in each one of them and continue to develop ideas, particularly when we find we're not achieving our goals as quickly as we want.
So collectively, of these 25 action teams, what is that, 100?
There's actually five action teams.
Five action teams.
So we put, they each have about five goals under each one of them, yeah.
So what do you got, 50 people working on this during the course of the year?
Yeah, it's probably each group is about 15, so yeah.
Oh, wow.
So that's a little bit more than 50, yeah, closer to 75.
And there's, what do they have, some kind of reporting structure during the course of the year?
Yeah, so every year we're expecting them to kind of report out on the things that they've worked on in the past year and the progress we've made, which, again, we'll share all that with our Board of Trustees and others.
So there's no slapping at the wrist like, what are you doing? Why haven't you gotten this done? It's more of, where are you and where are you going?
Well, I think if they come back with a report that says we're not going to do anything new or we're not going to change anything, we don't hit our goals, then there may be slapping of wrists and say, all right, let's go back and rethink this. But again, it's a pretty collaborative process, and they are coming up with all kinds of different ideas. So,
well, I know one of the goals that you had was, and I don't know what umbrella it fell under,
right,
but it had to do with increasing student enrollment,
right,
so that you could improve the financial well-being of the university. Where are you now, a year or two into that?
Yeah, and in the first year we had a pretty modest goal because we didn't think there was going to be big changes in that first year. And really, in order to grow enrollment, we have to do some things differently. What's happening next year is we have four master's programs that are coming fully online, and that will help to increase the enrollment. And it'll hit a little bit in this fall of 18, but by fall of 19 is where it really should start to come together and see a much bigger increase in enrollment.
And just to take a master's program and put it online, I mean, my God, what is involved with that?
It's really going class by class. Because what you want to make sure you do is you just don't go to the faculty member and say, hey, great, your class is online now, go ahead and do that. You want to provide them the support to do that, to develop the class well. There's a lot of, for the online classes, a real way you go about developing classes to make sure it has that high quality experience that you want for students. And so we're doing that class by class. And so right now we're focusing on developing the classes that will be first in line, the ones we're offering in the fall. But we'll keep developing until we have the whole curriculum for those four programs developed.
So let's just say I wanted to get an MBA.
Yes.
All right. That's a two-year program?
Yeah.
Two-year program.
Yeah, generally, yes, but yeah.
I don't know how many classes are involved with that,
right.
But quite a few.
Yeah.
So there's a portion of those classes online that would be viewed live and others that would be pre-recorded?
Well, it's all of the classes will be online. So if you're on the online program, it's entirely online, so you could be virtually anywhere and be taking that program. So that's true for all four of those programs. So how they do that and how we create an interaction between students and faculty may vary a little from course to course or even program to program, but all of them will follow that same model.
So, again, going back to the MBA.
Yeah.
Let's say whatever one of those courses was in the MBA program, once it's structured properly.
Right.
It would be presented in a class setting and somebody be recording it?
No, it's not following the traditional model professor and just recording their lecture. That was kind of, when I was an undergraduate, they did that with economics. So we had a professor who taught economics through a big classroom, and then they showed it on TV in other classrooms, and you could take it that way. That's kind of the old model. Now the model is a little bit different, and again, it varies based on the class, but it's not necessarily watching a professor just speak online. It's more interactive. It's different. They may be asking you to work on certain problems or projects, whatever it is, and that kind of interaction is a little bit different than that, yeah.
So this is a case where you have to invest money to make some money. In other words, you just can't do this.
No, there's definitely an investment in the training for faculty and helping them to put the classes online. We're working with Del Tech Wiley on the program, so they're helping us a lot with marketing the program, but obviously that's an investment you have to put into it, helping kind of coordinate between the two of us on the technology needs. You want to make sure the students not only get the great classroom experience, but also have the support they need outside. So when they have tech problems, how do you solve those really quickly? So if I'm taking a class and my computer's not connecting well to the class, they need someplace to go to. So it's all of that other support that's also part of it as well.
So how do you handle questions in an online program? I mean, if I'm listening to this lecture and I'm writing down, I don't understand this.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, again, I should point out now, I've never taught an online class, so I'm knowing from talking with other people. But again, a lot of it is much like you would do. You could do it as you do with a chat online when you're trying to. I just bought Disney tickets for my family. So you're chatting with someone online and you're asking questions, and they can take questions from multiple people. So if you're a class of, say, 20, they could be taking questions from any one of the 20 as they're presenting material. So there's ways nowadays to do that that can be very, very interactive. In fact, we find sometimes the online classes can be even more interactive than the face-to-face classes. Yeah, sometimes you can hide a little bit more in the face-to-face, and then online there's kind of more of that interaction is needed.
So when you get down to this, you're doing this because it'll save a student money, number one, and number two, it allows them to continue doing what they're doing in their regular world and still grow their educational platform.
Right, and that's the biggest issue.
All right. So from a dollars and cents standpoint, if I was to do a conventional MBA program right now, that would run me roughly what versus if I did it totally online?
Yeah, I don't know if something, because it all depends on how you do it and whether you're in-state or out-of-state. The difference often with the online programs is there's a set tuition to in-state or out-of-state.
Right.
And that's set, and so everybody knows what that is in comparison to traditional graduate programs, which have an in-state and out-of-state rate. Whether they're cheaper or not really varies from place to place. And a lot of that is they're set based on what the rate is in the market. So when I was at Louisville, for example, we charged 130% of in-state tuition for all classes, whether you're in-state or out-of-state. So for an in-state student, it was actually more expensive. For an out-of-state student, it was less expensive. Kent, it was the same tuition as everything else. Ours varies a little bit depending on which program.
Okay. Interesting. What was the other thing I was going to ask you about? I guess that's enough. So this is going to start coming online this fall.
Fall, 2018.
By the fall of 19. is when it's really going to be working.
I think that's where you really start to see the bigger impact on enrollment, because now all the programs are now in their kind of second cycle of people coming into the program, or actually multiple cycles because they can enter at different times. So the fall will just be that first group coming in. But as we get into spring and next fall, now you have more students coming into the program.
So those four programs are going to be what?
MBA is one of them. Intervention Specialist Education Program. So focus on those kind of special education. Arts Administration and Social Work, which may end up being one of the most popular ones. There's less that do social work online, and our program is outstanding and has a great reputation.
So somebody must have sat down and figured out, once we have these online, how many additional students will this generate for the university?
Yes.
And that number is?
They've projected it out, and actually it could be several hundred students between those programs. It depends on where we actually end up hitting. So they project, and then we find out what really happens. But if we hit anywhere near their projections, this will be several hundred students.
So that takes care of the online component
right. As
far as new students.
Yes.
But what about those that you want to fill these classrooms and dormitories on the campus?
Right.
How are we doing on that?
That has been fairly steady. So, again, there hasn't been a massive change in that. And given what's happening nationally, I don't think the traditional age student will change a whole lot as far as the number of students we have in that age group. Because that's kind of what most comprehensives are seeing. They're seeing it's either flat or actually in some cases declining. So kind of flat enrollment with that group is pretty good. The only way we might be able to change that some is by expanding some programming there too. So say a bachelor's of public health, where we see real growth in some of our health-related and science-related professions, that might increase enrollment because it'd be a new program. The one we are looking at, which isn't the ones in the dormitory, is a bachelor's of professional studies. And that would be for adult-age students who have some college but never finished a degree. And this is an opportunity for them to come back and finish that degree. That will come online hopefully in fall 19.
Isn't that interesting? So because of whatever the population demographics in the country, and I guess because of the spiraling cost of higher education, most universities and colleges across the country are not expecting the kind of growth they had 10, 15 years ago.
No, actually, the last several years has been a decline nationally in college enrollment, particularly among, again, that traditional age group, the 18 to 22-year-olds. The fastest-growing population is the adult age population. So the little bit older population is where we're seeing growth. The traditional age actually has been somewhat declining.
Do you see, or do the forecasters tell you, that this trend will kind of reverse itself down the road, or are you just no?
There isn't a lot of indication I've seen as you project out that this is going to change in any really significant way. And again, it hits different states in different degrees. So you look at states, and particularly in the Northeast, they're seeing a really rapid decline. So they're in a much more desperate situation. And when they're in a desperate situation, then they start recruiting more out-of-state students, and they start to go to those places that are growing a little bit more, which tends to be more in the South. So the competition nationally has really increased.
So a lot of your focus is on that very issue, which is how do we at least maintain the current level of students. And I know this discussion goes on all the time, and that is the cost of going to higher ed. And there's some we hear this every year in the legislative session. You guys are charging too much. You can't keep doing this. We got to do combinations and pooling of resources and what have you. And nothing really comes out of all of that. So when it comes to the cost and the tuition of Winthrop, I know you raise it minimally. Was it 2% or 3%?
About 2.5% the last couple of years.
2.5%. I'm not sure how you do that in light of everything else going up more than 2.5%.
I'm very fiscally conservative, so that's how you do it.
But is there, I know, for instance, my alma mater, there was something that came out a few months ago where they were actually cutting the tuition by a couple of $1,000s a year. Now, their tuition is a different model than your tuition. But, I mean, does your board ever think about things like that?
Yeah. In fact, we were going to talk in a couple of weeks about tuition models a little bit. So we have talked about that several times. The private institutions tend to do a lot of discounting right now. And so they have some flexibility on, do you charge, say, $50,000 and then ultimately give students $20,000 in aid, or do you charge $40,000 and give them $10,000 in aid? In some ways, you get to the same point here regardless. And my son going through this process, we see this, and there's a psychology of, am I getting a great deal? So sometimes people like to see the larger scholarship package compared to the tuition. So it's kind of an interesting thing. I will say for the average, we looked at this year because I was curious. What does the average in-state freshman at Winthrop actually pay out of pocket for tuition? And it's about $4,400, which is a fraction of what our published tuition actually is. Now, they get there a variety of ways, state scholarships, Pell Grants, and scholarships from us. But it's actually a lot less than people think it is.
And that's for the course of a whole year?
That's for a whole year, yeah.
And then, of course, you got to have the room and board.
That doesn't include all of those other things, right?
I got you.
Yeah.
Well, it was also interesting. Again, I saw this flyer from my alma mater that 91% of their student body at Sewanee is now getting some kind of financial help, whatever it is. It could be $200. It could be $10,000. I have no idea. Are you seeing those kinds of numbers as well?
Yeah. We're up in the, I think for the freshmen, it's maybe 98%. So it's most of our people get some sort of aid. I think across the student population, it's somewhere in the 90-plus percent range, and that's common. I mean, we were talking earlier, my son's going through the college process right now, and everybody we get material from says 90% of them get aid, and every place he's applied to and got in, he's gotten aid. So it is pretty much the norm.
And then the other statistic, which is really alarming nationwide, is percentage of your students over there that have got college loans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's high.
Mm-hmm.
It's 80%, somewhere in there.
A lot of them get some loans. And again, it's the loan thing is an interesting one. Some get them even when they don't need them because their parents see the value in getting the loan and being able to pay it back. And so, you know, again, in our situation, I make pretty good money, but my son, we could take out a loan for his education too. Some desperately need it. Some probably don't desperately need it, but choose to do it for a variety of financial reasons. The big thing we focus on is the kind of student debt at the end and what that is and how well our students pay it back, which I think our debt tends to be a little below the national average, and our students' ability to pay it back is better than the national average.
Well, you've got your work cut out for you. You have to maintain what you've got and grow this online component to make the plan work that you all spent a couple of years putting together. That's the bottom line of it, right?
Yep.
And with that, we're going to take our mid-program break. Mind you that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Back after these words.
News and information that matters to you. This is Straight Talk.
So, Charlie, what's Substation 2 doing for St. Patty's Day?
Well, that's easy. We're bringing back our popular corned beef sandwich. It's lean, perfectly seasoned, sliced fresh to order, and garden just the way you like.
Don't miss this limited time offer at Substation 2.
Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Good Pharmacy, building trust for four generations.
This is pharmacist Kia Hicklin. Enjoy our spacious new modern look and take advantage of Rock Hill's original drive-through with pickup and drop-off service.
My mom loves Good Pharmacy.
Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue, Rock Hill.
Don't resign your retirement plan to some rule of thumb. Your own personal retirement is unique to you and your family. Give our common sense investing approach a shot. Anderson Griggs Investments, a genuine money manager right here in Rock Hill. 324-5044 or online at AndersonGriggs.com.
It's here. The new Founders Online has a new look and new features. View all your accounts with one username. Free bill pay. Block your cards on demand. Use Founders Pay to transfer money to other Founders members. Apply for all types of loans and much more. Log in today or get the app to experience the new Founders Online. Not a Founders member? Visit RelaxJoinFounders.com to see if you qualify for membership. Founders is federally insured by NCUA.
So, Charlie, what's Substation 2 doing for St. Patty's Day?
Well, that's easy. We're bringing back our popular corned beef sandwich. It's lean, perfectly seasoned, sliced fresh to order, and garden just the way you like.
Don't miss this limited time offer at Substation 2.
Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax. You're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, where we make fresh subs and salads 7 days a week. All you have to do is slice, 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 garden, 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 and it works delicious no matter what you get. Dr. Dan Mahoney is with us today, president of Winthrop University for almost 3 years now. Got a lot on your plate just to wrap up all the numbers, things that we were talking about. to make the overall thing work over there at Winthrop University, you're doing it basically by recognizing that the student population, the on-campus student population, is not going to grow dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to make it up by these new online programs that we'll continue to add that'll bring people in, not on the campus, but online, and they'll be paying fees, and that'll help us get where we need to get to.
Yeah, and I think that's the best strategy at this point for most universities, like Winthrop.
With that being said, we all know about this beautiful University Center project ongoing, 25 acres being turned into a mecca as we sit here and speak. Part of that project is one or two buildings of new student housing, which you all have committed yourselves to?
They've committed to that. So that's privately developed. Those aren't ours. It's not our student housing.
So they offer student housing. I guess something doesn't work here. They're offering student housing, and you're telling me that you don't expect a whole lot more students on campus right now. So when they open those buildings up, where are the students going to come from?
Probably largely from the student population, particularly the juniors and seniors who would prefer to live closer to campus. I think once some of the amenities and the nice facilities that will be a part of that project will choose to live there as opposed to maybe going further away or some other place. We also probably will see some growth in our graduate student population, and something close to campus like that would be perfect for graduate students.
All right. The other thing that is a component of University Center is there's going to be housing, there's going to be apartments down there, and there's also going to be some condominiums down there. And we all know that it's very, it's a new trend, or a trend that's been growing, is that the baby boomers want to be around university campuses where they can go take advantage of all the stuff that goes on.
Yeah, and that'd be fantastic. And I think we've had some discussions, too, of if they have a kind of senior living facility, of can we do some partnering there, create some lifelong learning opportunities, which is kind of what's happened in a few of those other places. And I think that would be fantastic. And hopefully things that would ultimately not just be for the people living in there, but would be more available to residents throughout Rock Hill, because that really helps connect the people who may move in there from someplace else with people who are in Rock Hill. It just creates a greater opportunity for them to meet people as well.
And, of course, the big gemstone is coming out of the ground right now, which is that 170,000 square foot indoor sports arena. And you're going to be part of that, are you not?
Not in a like major way. We have our own kind of sports facilities. I think that the way we'll partner more is obviously a lot of our it's a great opportunity for our students and graduates as far as job opportunities. There may be opportunities in some cases when they need more space for events. I mean, we have the West Center and the Coliseum, so there may be partnership opportunities there as well. I think we'll have to see as that program comes along. But to be honest, what they're going to have inside that facility is far exceeds what most places have for AAU and Junior Olympic. I mean, we did a lot of this with my daughter with AAU basketball. We would have loved to have had a facility to go to like that where everything was there, close to a downtown. Really, everything they have there would have been a dream. And we never found that in any of the trips we did.
Speaking of sports and venues, one of the things, and this may be an outgrowth of your strategic plan, is you are very purposely moving in a direction to start doing what you need to do to create events at Burns Auditorium and also at the Coliseum. And I know you've got some money from the state, several million dollars, to do an upfit on Burns. I don't know. When's that going to start?
Actually, sometime this summer. So we're actually still working through that and determining exactly what we're going to do. We got about $4.5 million. Frankly, I would like to raise a little bit more, because if we raise some more money, we could do even more with that project.
Right.
This is one of those great opportunities to take a facility that's really a gem and update it and improve it in a way that would be really great for hosting not just our events, but events from outside that would like to come to our campus. So I think that this is a fun, wonderful opportunity for us.
And the same thing is true with the Coliseum. I mean, one of the things that you'd like to do is to bring outside events to it as well.
Absolutely. And so that's another thing we're looking at, and we're trying to do more of that now. At some point, too, it would be nice, and we won't get money from the state to do that. We'll have to raise it in some other way. But if we had resources to update the Coliseum, there's probably even more events we could bring in.
And the only update I can think you need is a sound system in there.
That would be one of them. Yeah, that's you've identified that one. That is one on our list.
Yeah, right at the top. I always chuckle when Donald Trump came here to do his campaign appearance. His advance crew came in, and they didn't like the sound system. So what do? They brought their own in.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely magnificent.
Just wish they had left it for us.
Yeah, they should have left it. That should have been the fee. Leave it here for us. But you've also hired somebody who I had a chance to meet, whose name I've forgotten, who is working exclusively on getting these facilities, I don't know, permitted or whatever needs to do.
Yeah.
Get them all set up to do this kind of stuff, and then to attract those events down here.
Yeah, and that's it. It's probably Neil Miller that you were talking with. And, Neil has had a lot of experience at other places when he was out in Colorado, like doing that, where they were bringing in big events and really big acts. And so he's done this before. He knows this world a lot better than the rest of us do. And so we're real excited about the ideas he has.
With that being said, I had two of your teammates here. I had Dr. Ken Halpin, and I had good old Dr. Jeff Perez here.
Yes.
Talking about the strategic plan that they had finished for sports.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can summarize this for me, because I wasn't too good a student that day.
Yeah.
I didn't quite take it all in.
I think what they really tried to do, and what I liked about the process they went through, is first they looked at what the university's strategic plan is and says, you know, how do we play a role? And Ken and I have talked about this a lot. Sometimes we talk about, for example, how, you know, athletic departments and athletic success can help enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
But most places just assume it's going to happen, as opposed to thinking more strategically about how can we use athletic success or athletic programs to grow enrollment. And so he really started with our strategic plan and said, okay, how do we fit into that? What he also tried to do was bring people from across campus, Jeff included, who are not in athletics, to be part of that process. So rather than athletics being kind of isolated out on their own island, of being this more of a community, university community-wide discussion about what the plan is going forward. So a lot of their goals, if they were accomplished their goals, will directly feed into what we're trying to do in the Winthrop plan.
We got about 30 seconds left, and I want you to give us a summary of all the logic and thinking that went into the new logo that's all over the campus right now.
Yeah, I mean, that was, again, a very collaborative process. We did surveys, did focus groups. We included alumni, students, a whole bunch of different groups, and really tried to find something that would be uniquely ours and we could be consistent with going forward, both from a logo, from a color standpoint. They really went through that whole process, and it was nice because about 90% of the time, everybody in the room was in agreement. So we didn't have where people, one group like this and another like that. And so we felt we were in the right place. They brought it to me at the end. My only role was to say either thumbs up or thumbs down. That was the only involvement I had. And I liked what they developed, and I liked the collaborative process.
Well, treasure that moment where everybody agreed, because it don't happen too often.
I wouldn't say everybody, but.
Dr. Dan Mahoney, thanks for all that you're doing at Winthrop, but thanks for being here today.
No, thank you.
And that'll wrap up our Straight Talk program live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments at Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. And, of course, we do this thing every day live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Fresh subs and salads prepared right before your eyes 7 days a week. Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden. Have yourself a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.